Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
You act as a representative for all feminists who believe in the culture of life. Organizations like the Susan B. Anthony List are returning the woman's movement back to its original roots, back to what it was all about in the beginning. You remind us that the earliest leaders of the women's rights movements, they were pro-life.
That's Sarah Palin speaking to the Susan B. Anthony List recently. She's talking about pro-life feminism. Is there such a thing, especially when feminism, especially in the culture and in the popular media, has been so closely wedded to being pro-choice? Joining us to talk about pro-life feminism, Colleen Carroll Campbell, host of a weekly television program called Faith and Culture. She's author of the book The New Faithful, and she's also written a commentary for the Washington Post's On Faith blog titled Pro-Life Feminism is the Future. Colleen, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Well, in the popular media, feminism, that is kind of the radical left feminism, and abortion are so closely wedded, they're almost indistinguishable from one another, abortion rights. Should that be?
Well, I don't think feminism and abortion rights should be as closely linked as they are. I do think you're right when you say that radical far-left feminism is, of course, linked that way. And the public mind, unfortunately, I think all feminism has become linked with the push for abortion as some sort of primary human right due to women, which is, of course, an affront to the human rights of her child. But actually, if you look back at the early American feminists, women like Susan B. Anthony, they were pretty firmly against abortion because they thought it was an affront to a woman's dignity, and they thought it was, frankly, a way for men to get out of taking responsibility for the children that they had fathered. And so groups like the Susan B. Anthony List and Feminists for Life and others are trying to recover this original understanding of abortion as an affront to women's dignity rather than something that furthers the cause of women's equality.
So take us, I'm intrigued by what you said about the earliest feminists. Take us back there and kind of, if you will, correct the history or at least fill in the gaps that are often left out in kind of that suffragette early feminist scenario that the leftist feminists, so closely wedded with abortion rights, want to claim as their heritage.
Well, certainly, as I mentioned, Susan B. Anthony, women like Elizabeth Cady Stanton and others, and this history has been documented pretty thoroughly by groups like Feminists for Life. They were very firmly against abortion. As I said, they tended to see it as sort of the remnant of a culture that pushed women to dispose of children that the men who had fathered the children found inconvenient to support. And I think we can certainly see this today. I mean, we always hear that an unplanned pregnancy is dealing with it as a woman's choice, but unsaid in that, but very strongly implied, is that dealing with it is also a woman's problem. It's your choice, honey, you know, and you deal with it. But for the early feminists, that was not the way that they looked at abortion. They certainly didn't see it as liberating. In fact, they had some pretty strong statements, you know, quotes talking about the fact that a woman cannot fight for her own equal rights and her own dignity if she's trying to do so at the expense of the dignity and the rights of her child. And so for these feminists, certainly many of the early ones saw the concerns of children inextricably linked with the concerns of their mothers. And they saw progress for women being linked with progress for respect for children. And, of course, that included the unborn child. Now we know in the second wave of modern feminism, that was pretty much entirely lost. In the late 1960s and early 1970s, feminism quickly became abortion-centric, where abortion, the right to destroy the unborn child who would inconvenience you or alter your life or stop you from realizing the unfettered sexual liberation that the sexual revolution promised, all of that is what we began to hear from the second wave of modern feminists. And so many of us forget that there was this earlier wave where abortion was not considered a panacea for all that ails women and was in fact considered a real crime and something that actually degraded women, that they had to that they would have to undergo abortion or be pushed into it often by men who didn't want to support their children.
Is it now today kind of a generational thing among women?
It is. More and more young women today we are seeing are trending pro-life. Now, this is true of young people in general, but especially among young women, we're seeing a real sea change, and they are not willing to turn their backs on what they see as the good that has been wrought by feminism, that is, you know, more opportunities for women in the workplace and in educational sphere and in politics and public life. They don't want to reject that, but they don't see any reason that they need to support the killing of the innocent unborn in order to embrace those good gains that have been made by feminists. So, you know, we're seeing this in polls, of course. We've seen Gallup polls recently that have shown a majority of Americans now identify themselves as pro-life rather than pro-choice. But interestingly enough, it's not simply older Americans that are driving that. The Gallup poll last May that found that, reached that conclusion, also found that the percentage of young adults who believe that abortion should be illegal in all circumstances has risen from about 1 in 7 in the early 1990s to 1 in 4 today. And today, 18 to 29-year-olds are now tied with senior citizens as the group most likely to favor the outlawing of abortion. And, of course, we saw in Missouri, which is considered a bellwether state on this issue, Overbrook Research Firm in 2007 came up with some very interesting data showing that women had shifted from strongly pro-choice to strongly pro-life in terms of their self-identification, and it was the young women that were driving this shift. There are certainly plenty of pro-choice women still left, and some of them are young women, but we're hearing more and more from abortion rights activists that they're fearful about what the future is bringing. Nancy Keenan, who's the NARAL president, which used to be known as the National Abortion Rights Action League. Now they just call themselves NARAL Pro-Choice. I guess they don't want to use the term abortion. She recently called herself and her fellow abortion rights crusaders members of the postmenopausal militia and said that she's very fearful of the youthful enthusiasm that she saw at the March for Life, at this year's March for Life in Washington, D.C. So there are all sorts of signs that young women are rejecting this old tie between abortion and feminism that has been perpetuated now for four decades.
Now, what this makes me wonder is to what degree pro-abortion feminists have done this to themselves. We'll get Colleen's take on that on the other side of this break. Then, after a few minutes more with Colleen Carroll Campbell on pro-life feminism, we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week with you. We've got our four soundbites ready to play. You get ready to listen and call 1-877-623-6943. Email us, talkback@issuesetc.org. Twitter us at IssuesETC. Or leave your vote at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/IssuesETC.
These days, value affords me a new attitude. It lets me appreciate that I can start my day with more than a $6 cup of coffee, and that I officially have permission to skip dinner out to spend time talking with my family over Casserole Inn. Concordia Publishing House offers Christian products that help me focus on what matters most. Visit any of the three Concordia bookstores downtown, in Kirkwood, and on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton, or shop online at cph.org and find out what a new value attitude looks like in your life.
Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Helping children wait no more.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Little more than 1 year after Focus on the Family's Wait No More adoption initiative began, the Colorado Department of Human Services reported that only 365 children eligible for adoption remain in foster care. This means that over half of Colorado's waiting children have been adopted. Too often, pro-lifers are accused of not addressing the issue of children in need after they are born. But adoption initiatives such as this are a great opportunity to affirm human life in all its stages. All children deserve love and a family. The opportunities are many, and the need is great.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. It's Friday afternoon, May the 21st. A few more minutes with Colleen Carroll Campbell talking about pro-life feminism, then we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the week. Colleen Carroll Campbell's host of a weekly television program, Faith and Culture. She's author of the book, The New Faithful, and she's written a commentary for the Washington Post's On Faith blog titled Pro-Life Feminism is the Future. Colleen, you were talking before about the shift in the demographic in the way that women, young women, poll in our country on the issue of abortion now, women who would consider themselves to be feminists in some sense. Have pro-abortion feminists done this to themselves?
I think they have. I think they've narrowed their movement and its goals. They've made it so restrictive that the vast majority of American women have a difficult time identifying with feminism. If you extract certain, you know, lofty goals, do you believe women and men, you know, should be given equal opportunities in education or in the workforce, that sort of thing, equal pay for equal work? Most American women will say yes, but they don't hear feminist organizations talking about things like that so much as they hear abortion, abortion, abortion. And we certainly see that these groups are not simply for, you know, pro-choice, as they call themselves. I mean, there's really nothing but pro-abortion that can describe some of these groups that will not even bring themselves to oppose partial birth abortion or probably the most sexist crime of all, sex-selective abortion, where unborn girls are terminated simply because they are girls. I mean, when we can't even find a feminist in the establishment part of American feminism, that is the one tied inextricably with abortion, unfortunately, when we can't even find them willing to denounce sex-selective abortion, then I think it's pretty clear the mission creep is total, and they've lost sight of what feminism was supposed to be all about.
Finally, then, with only a minute, you say, let the debate over the true meaning of feminism begin. What should that debate sound like?
Well, I think it has to be about abortion, at least initially, and then it has to widen, I think, to issues of faith and family. Certainly, pro-life women feel very marginalized by today's feminist establishment, but you could also argue, of course, that women of faith feel marginalized, and women who find joy in having children, in being mothers, who see that as a vocation that expands and enlarges their personality and their approach to life rather than as something constricting and oppressive. So whether the issue is faith or family or pro-life, women are rejecting a lot of this old orthodoxy about feminism and abortion going together and about what feminism is and isn't. And so I think that's a good thing, but the debate has to continue. And unfortunately, we're going to be stuck on this abortion issue until more voices are allowed to come into this debate and say, hey, I don't see how my equality and my liberation as a woman is dependent on my ability to kill my child. In fact, I think that ability is something I don't want, and I think it actually degrades me that you would even try to give me that freedom and say that it's some sort of human right for me. You know, a woman's dignity will be secure when all human persons' dignity is secure, and that includes the unborn child who grows within her womb.
Colleen Carroll Campbell is host of a weekly television show called Faith and Culture. She's author of the book, The New Faithful. She's also written a commentary for the Washington Post's On Faith blog titled Pro-Life Feminism is the Future. You can read it under the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Thanks, Colleen.
You're welcome, Todd.